بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، والعاقبة للمتقين، ولا عدوان إلا على الظالمين، والصلوات الله وسلامه على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. اللهم لا سهل إلا ما جعلته سهلا، وأنت تجعل الحزن إذا شئت سهلا. اللهم أعنا على ذكرك وشكرك وحسن عبادتك يا رب الكريم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته everybody. Alright, so hope you guys are all good. And welcome to everybody on site here and then all the folks online, mashallah. Tasneem after a very long time, mashallah. And we have mashallah Asif Yani joining from the States. Obviously got nothing better to do. We need to get him busy on some spreadsheets. And Auntie Shakila's here, so big salams to her, and that's great. All right, so we're going to jump straight into the lesson. We're going to try to be more disciplined than usual. You know this whole hour thing, yeah?
Right.
The whole...
hour, when have you ever used 1 hour? Only when you're traveling.
MashaAllah. So I have, Yani, is that what you're saying? Oh, yeah, okay. So the whole hour thing, but I'm saying the theory of the hour.
Yeah.
Was the theory of the hour that the lesson goes to the hour and then it's Q&A? Or was it that the theory of the hour is that it's got to finish before then and the Q&A's got to finish before the hour?
Well, I think the hour was the lesson and the Q&A.
Go to 50 minutes and then complete the Q&A to an hour, then... Ahsan is a machine. MashaAllah. Ahsan is different. MashaAllah. MashaAllah. He has no comparison, bro. There are different levels to this game. Right. I don't know, MashaAllah. Everyone's having a social. We're in the middle of a lesson here, by the way. I know that you're thinking we're just chatting, but we're actually in the lesson, guys. Yeah. They're like, oh, well, they're chatting, so we might as well chat. Right. So let's carry on then in the chapter of the eclipse. The Arabic of today is فَإِن تَجَلَّ الْكُسُوفُ فِيهَا أَتَمَّهَا خَفِيفَةً وَإِن غَابَتِ الشَّمْسِ كَاسِفَةً أَوْ طَلَعَتْ وَالْقَمْرُ خَاسِفٌ أَوْ كَانَتْ آيَةً غَيْرَ الزَّلْزَلَةً لَمْ يُصَلِّ. We're not going to do more than that because it's actually quite a bit of stuff we need to talk about today. So, if the eclipse finishes whilst one is in prayer, it is concluded quickly. If the sun sets during a solar eclipse or the sun rises during a lunar eclipse or a natural disaster other than an earthquake occurs, one does not offer the prayer. Okay, so in this last paragraph, you do not offer the prayer in these three scenarios. If the sun sets during a solar eclipse, if the sun rises during a lunar eclipse, or a natural disaster other than an earthquake occurs. And in summary, what we're saying here, right, for those who don't want to stay for the lesson, that we can just basically cover it nice and easy, that if the sun sets during a solar eclipse, then what's so special about that? Nothing there, right? To be eclipsed, nothing there to be afraid of in the first place. If the sun rises during a lunar eclipse, you're not going to be able to see anything anyway. Now the sky is full of light. The whole point of the moon is that it was bright and suddenly became dark. Well, if it's become bright again, what's the value of the lunar eclipse? It goes back to the point. And then the third one is a bit separate, a natural disaster other than an earthquake. We'll discuss that next week. So it's now going back again to what we started off these chapters with, which is all about what is the illah behind the eclipse prayer. That there's got to be some shock and awe involved. That shock and awe is definitely a key player in the establishing or the legislation, I should say, of the prayer. Sheikh Uthaymeen says that the author's statement, may Allah have mercy upon him, فَإِن تَجَلَّ الْكُسُوفُ فِيهَا, and so if the eclipse finishes, Tajalla is indicating like, yani, it's over, okay? Al-kusufu fiha. يعني the كسوف, the eclipse فيها. كسوف here, because as we said for a month ago, that when a word is used in its absolute sense, like unrestricted sense, then it means the eclipse of both the moon and the sun. But if you are talking about both in a sentence, then we say the khusuf for the shams and the khusuf for the qamar. What are the huruf shamsiya? What are they again? I'm not good at stuff like that. What's a huruf qamariya and huruf shamsiya? Yeah. The huruf al-qamariya are? Yeah, like just give me some examples. I got no idea, that's why. The huruf qamariya. They are the ones that they do not yani take a they can't be blended. So that's qamariya, yeah? Yeah, so I was thinking about this earlier on, right? If you think about it, yeah. What is kha? That's qamariya. Is kaf shamsiya? It's qamariya, isn't it? Yeah. It'd been nice if you could link actually kusuf and khusuf to a qamariya and shamsiya, but actually both are qamariya, aren't they? Kaf and kha are both qamariya. So there's no way. By the way, I've been doing eclipses and writing about eclipses. Yani subhanAllah, one of the first articles I wrote in English was about the eclipse, like about 30 years ago. And I can tell you right now that from that day until now, I have no idea which kusuf and khusuf is. I always forget. And I've been trying to find a pattern for it. And I thought I struck it. And I thought that, maybe the huruf qamariya and shamsiya will help. And then they both turn out to be qamariya. So anyway, forget that theory. So kusuf is for the shams. Ka. So kusuf means a solar eclipse. And khusuf with a kha is for the lunar eclipse. And if someone comes up with a clever way to remember which one's which, then great. Anyway, the point that the author is making is that you use two separate words when you're identifying both ones. But if you don't mention the sun or the moon, and we're just talking about eclipse, then either word means both, right? So khusuf means both, kusuf means both. But if we're then being specific, then kusuf means the shams, meaning the sun, and khusuf means the luna, means the moon, all right? So if the eclipse essentially finishes fiha, the pronoun in it is referring to what? In the time, in the moment, in the city? No, it's fiha, in the prayer. So whilst you are praying, the eclipse finishes. All right, that's the situation that we have in front of us. How do we now do the fiqh of this matter? So the first thing is that how do we know that there's an eclipse? We said before that this is not a scientific announcement, or it's not someone that's told you on the news. You got to see it. If you don't see it, you don't experience it, you don't pray it. And that's even if you're inside and you're so deep inside where you've got no windows. Now, if you're inside and you've got windows, you can feel a little bit of it, see a little bit of it, then you should pray. All right? The key is that it actually affects you. So the real question should be, if you're praying, how are you going to know that it's over? Well, obviously, our masajid are very simple buildings. They're not normally as closed as you may think, right? And still in the Muslim world, they're very, very open buildings. You know, walls are at a premium. Side walls are not very, very important, right? Especially villages and the like. And if it does, then they've got large gaps, and mostly because the countries are quite warm, right? They don't have windows in the gaps. So in the window frames, sorry. So in the window frames, it's cheaper, no brick, and just leave it open. And it's good because we want natural air. And for a couple of months of the year, you know, December and January, it's cold, but that's a minor. Everyone comes in with big coats and all the rest of it. And the rest of the time we want. And so I just want you to understand that obviously these, again, context is everything. So when you see books written for the last 1400 years, it's because the last 1400 years has a culture that everyone can relate to. And so you are feeling that the sun has, you know, risen and Fajr is in, Fajr is not, X, Y, Z. You can really, you know, you can really ascertain and feel what's going on outside. And so Sheikh says that that when the eclipse happens, then you'll see it, even if you're inside. If it's in a daytime, it's obvious. And if it's in a nighttime, it's obvious. But if you are closed in, meaning you've got the roof, you've got the walls, you've got the doors, whatever, whatnot, then the only way that you're going to find out is if someone tells you, right? So if that's the case, then is that acceptable? The answer is yes. So if, for example, you are inside and someone comes and says, it's over, that's what you go by. And by the way, this whole thing of it's over, it's on, you're doing something wrong, blah, 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 this is something which historically has been very important in the establishment of this deen, because one of the principles of this deen, that the statement of a sahabi by itself is an evidence to change a whole act of worship, meaning it should be taken a certain knowledge, is actually a cheap, is actually a key principle in aqidah, right? That when the companions in Masjid al-Quba, and then later on also in a small masjid called Masjid Qiblatain, they call it today, Masjid Abi Salama, once Fajr and once Dhuhr, they're praying, guy comes along, says, hey, Qibla has changed, I prayed with the Prophet ﷺ in both scenarios, and everyone turns around. They don't ask who, where, what's your name, blah, blah, blah. One statement from Sahabi, that's enough. And likewise, yani, if someone comes along and says the eclipse is over, I mean, you know, our default position is to trust people, right? Now, yeah, there are some exceptions to that. We spoke about those exceptions in quite a lot of detail. And that was in the prayer, when you are leading the prayer, right? And you make some mistakes or you have some doubts. And there's a guy behind you that's telling you, you know, you're making a mistake or whatever, but you're not sure that you are. And we went into a lot of detail about how you make the preponderant position, who gets dominant thingy, is one versus another one good enough? This is different, right? This is not the same case. You don't have any skin in this game. You're just an innocent bystander. You're not arguing an opposite position. Someone comes and says to you, the eclipse has finished, you're not going to say, no, it hasn't. Whereas if you're leading the salah and you stood up for the fifth rak'ah and someone goes, subhanallah, meaning you stood up for the fifth rak'ah, you're like, I'm not doing anything. I'm in the fourth, because you believe you're in the fourth. So it's a different situation. So in this scenario, the statement is made, we take it. Sheikh, he puts a scenario forward. He goes, what if it's one of these astronomer folks, right? What's the situation if it's a astronomer? And he says, yani, if it's are they to be taken seriously? And he goes, yeah. He goes, we do trust them, right? He gives a specific scenario. It's I've kind of jumped the gun a bit. But he goes from different scenarios that come out of this issue. The first one is that what if the eclipse has started and then it becomes extremely cloudy, which is obviously what the majority of people's experience will be, because the eclipse will never be one of these, you know, all black, all dramatic ones. It'll be a slight change in color and, you know, nothing much will change. And actually the cloud will be more darker than the actual eclipse. Now, what if it becomes cloudy and now you can't see the actual eclipse anymore? What do we do? Do we just take the statement of the astronomers who already told us beforehand? So you're in this catch-22, right? Because we're saying that we've got to keep the astronomers out of this game. It's got to be natural, got to be seen, got to hit your heart, got to be, oh my God, got to go to the prayer. And then when it goes, then you finish the prayer. And yet you know that on your phone, you've got the message that says 8:22 p.m. it starts, 9:35 p.m. it ends. That's the end of your bracket. Right? And so you make your plan, you go in and you say, we're going to pray for about an hour, guys. Or we're going to pray. You know what I'm trying to say? It's a tough one. Anyway, like all the scholars of Ahl Sunnah will say, the eclipse has got nothing to do with astronomers. It's about what you feel. But here he's saying, okay, well, you know, should we take their statement of, okay, we can't see anything anyway, and it is now 9:30. So according to what they said before, it's over anyway. He goes, yeah. نَعْمَلْ بِقَوْلِهِمْ لَأَنَّهُ ثَبَتَ بِالتَّجَارِبْ أَنَّ قَوْلَهُمْ مُنْضَبِطْ. It's a very good statement. He goes, yeah, we're going to take their position because we know
that actually their statements are not false statements. Their statements are proven. We don't dispute that they speak the truth. We dispute what they build upon the truth. You know what I'm saying? And that's one of the big things. You know, I used to find a lot of currency in this issue when I'm in a Dawah environment. I laugh because the last time I used this argument was in the most rocking place on the planet right now, which is where? Come on, man. What's the most rocking place? No. Where is the most rocking place on this planet right now? Like, what? Let me put it this way. Yani, of course. What would you want to be in Greenland for? Davos, of course. Davos. So, Davos is, you know, happens every year at the end of January, at this time, right now. And, you've got to imagine how boring it is, right? It's every year, it's the same thing. All the tech bosses, all the influencer types, religious leaders, and world leaders. And you're always looking to see the value of that year's Davos by who the big boys that come. And normally, it's so boring. But I was there one year. I think I've told this story many times when Erdogan and, what's his name? Who was the Jewish, who was the Israeli? I forgot who it was. Was it Ehud Barak? It wasn't Shimon Peres. Who's after that? Who's the big players after that? It wasn't Olmert. Wasn't Ehud Barak. It wasn't, I forgot who it was. It wasn't Netanyahu. It was, no, it wasn't Sharon. Who else was it? The Mies guy, it wasn't like a proper dog, yani, like Sharon and Netanyahu. It was, someone Google it. Someone Google Davos, Erdogan, and Israeli leader, and the name will come. Because that's going to bug me a lot. And that was fire, man. I'm telling you, that was a next level thing. It was, every session was madness and kickoffs, whatever. And I'm telling you now, I've never wanted to go back again. And I went to maybe a few, but this year's, I would love to have been there, bro. You've seen some of the speeches coming out. Is it Shimon Peres? Yeah? Right. Okay. Peres. Yeah. All right. So he's like a bit mesquite kind of guy, but he's, you know, like all of them, they're all sly, aren't they? Yeah. So, was it? What year did it say, Shaz? 2009. Yeah. So I think I was there in 04, 05, no, I don't know, whatever. But that was definitely the best one. And like I said, this one, and I was there once with Bush and Condoleezza Rice, and obviously he's a bit of a kebab, but that was fun. Yeah? But this one, oof. My guy not caring one little bit. Yeah, and they're taking no prisoners, cussing everyone, and everyone now trying to fight back. It's great. Anyway, so I want to say it was in 2009, same year, that I was there with Brian Cox. You know Brian Cox, the singer and turned physicist? He's got all these programs on science and whatever. And the session was on religion versus science, whatever, right? And there was some top scientists, obviously, and there's religious leaders and blah, blah, blah. And it's amazing to see dismissive. Yeah, and how dismissive scientists are of religion purely because they equate religion with Christianity. You know what I'm trying to say? It's their dominant reality. They don't understand or have any experience of religion afterwards, whatever or not. And I was like, I stood up, I said, bro, we are not the Christians, bro. You know what I mean? They're like, we're with you probably in more things, yani, in what you lot say, than yani, what they say. Right? And that's the key. The key is that where the Christians obviously not only theologically opposed them, but then they wanted to physically and destroy them all. Obviously, Dark Ages and what we see through history, and then obviously the Renaissance after that. But for them, the Renaissance, yani, clarity and guidance and advancement is all to getting rid of religion. Whereas we are now in our Dark Ages because our deen was strong and so our science was strong. Now our deen is weak and our science is nowhere. Right? We are the founders of literally all the classic, not founders, but, you know, key players in all the sciences, math and everything. But once the deen becomes strong or weak, then our personal circumstances become weak, we become further from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we get tested further, then it becomes about survival. When you're trying to survive, you ain't got no time to invest and build and, you know, enjoy the kind of stability and security that is needed to come up with ideas and develop theories and the like. And so this point is actually very important. Yani, we are supporting scientists and science and research all the time. We are never afraid of academia. We are never afraid of the evidence. Bring the evidence, and if the evidence establishes we are wrong, then ala rasi, yani, we take that, right? And often, if we're confident and we have the skills, we'll take the evidence and use it against the, as Ibn Taymiyyah, as he said about Ibn Taymiyyah, never was he presented with an evidence except they used that same evidence against the one who is bringing the argument forward. That's obviously the top level skill of a scholar. And so our point is not that the astronomers don't spend their whole lives studying the sun and then therefore are the experts. We will defer to them. We will take their ruling because the sun is sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in a regular fashion to be studied, to set the signs, to set the day, to set the month, to set the, as the Quran says. But to set something that Allah said it doesn't set, for example, the beginning of the month, that's where we say, thank you very much, sir. You know, that was very nice of you, and now just let us do our own thing. And so here, us going by their opinion doesn't harm us at all. And that's an important, as I said, balance that we need to have for our interaction with them. Anyway, so as soon as we know that it's done, whether we're told or whether we see that it's done, you complete the prayer quickly. You finish it off. Because you can't just cut the prayer. So again, the prayer is only established because of the eclipse. So the prayer now completes when the eclipse goes. You can't drop the prayer, but you do a dramatic drop. How dramatic a drop? So let's say that we've just done the first rak'ah of 40 minutes, which ain't a lot, by the way, right? In a eclipse setting, 40 minutes for a prayer is probably something like, you know, like maybe 15 pages. Yep. And let's say now that you've, that's including the two recitings. Now you're in the second unit and the eclipse is done. So a person's got to think that what is the balance between quickly? Because if your first raka'ah was 3 minutes, then the second raka'ah being 2 minutes is great. But if your first raka'ah is half an hour or 40 minutes and the second is 5 minutes, that's like horrible, isn't it? And Sheikh Uthaymeen says that, well, according to the what the Hanbalis are saying, يعني فظاهر كلامه أن الأمر يكون كذلك وحين إذن تكون الصلاة وكأنها صلاة جذماء مقطوعة بعض الأعضاء. He's basically saying that you would so suddenly cut the prayer that you'd finish it off super quick, whatever it looks like from the outside, so that it actually looks a bit deformed. Doesn't look like a balanced kind of prayer. It looks like a panicked exit. Like if someone was like, you know, making something and they had to rush, you can see that this was finished in a hurry. You know, beautiful work on the side, then whatever. He goes, that's what it's going to look like. He goes, is this acceptable? He said, it is acceptable, as long as it's a valid prayer. And he goes, that even if you did the second unit in 5 minutes, then we should then just drop it and finish it off quickly. He goes, what's the evidence for this approach? The evidence is that the statement of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, صَلُّوا حَتَّى يَنْكَشِفَ مَا بِكُمْ. Hadith Bukhari, Hadith 1060, that pray until the eclipse is over. Yani it uncovers. That which was covering you uncovers itself. So i.e. pray until the eclipse finishes. The word here is hatta. Hatta, we studied a lot in the chapter of purification. It means until. It like means the absolute end of, meaning that it's an actual limit. So, this hadith, it establishes clearly that one should not just be continuing the prayer just willy-nilly for as long as you want. That's the first reason. That's the first evidence. The second evidence is that this is a prayer that's prayed for a reason. And once the reason goes, then the prayer goes. All right? And when the reason is there, the prayer is there. When the reason is gone, the prayer is gone. Another discussion point is, what if you find out about the eclipse after it happened? So you were inside, and then they said there's an eclipse. You ran out and just about to pray in the masjid or whatever, and then it's gone. And Sheikh says, you don't make it up. It is not a prayer that is made up afterwards. Because we mentioned a beneficial qa'idah, a beneficial maxim, which is, أَنَّ كُلِّ عِبَادَةٍ مَقْرُونَةٍ بِالسَّبَبِ إِذَا زَالَ السَّبَبِ زَالَتْ مَشْرُوعِيَّتُهَا. Literally translated, every act of worship which is predicated with a reason. Is that correct English? Predicated with the reason. Once the reason goes, then its legislation, it being legislated, goes as well. That's literally. So how can we tidy that up? Every act of worship which is dependent upon a cause, not a reason, a cause. Every act of worship that is dependent upon a cause, once the cause expires, finishes, so does its legislation, meaning the act of worship. It's clear, I think, what I'm saying, but we do need a nice, tidy translation for that if anyone wants to give it a go. So, فالكسوف مثلا إذا تجلت الشمس أو تجلى القمر فإنها لا تعاد لأنها مطلوبة. Yeah. So the eclipse is clear. Once the sun comes back in the game, once the moon comes back in the game, then that's the end of it because the reason is gone, which was the covering of the moon and the sun. The third issue, or another issue, if one starts the eclipse prayer before the obligatory prayer, before the time of the obligatory prayer, and then the obligatory prayer time enters, what do you do? And the answer is common sense. If it's one of those like Maghrib, which is, or like Fajr, or whatever, and there's a risk of you not being able to make that obligatory prayer in its time or delaying it unnecessarily, then you bring the eclipse prayer to a nice smooth end and you pray the obligatory prayer because that takes priority. If, however, the time is a long one, yeah, and like Isha or like, I don't know, during daytime, Dhuhr, for example, you go 3 hours in the summer, yeah, then you would carry on in the eclipse prayer, keeping it nice and long, maintaining its structure, and then once it's finished, then you would offer the obligatory prayer. All right. Then our author says, وَإِنْ غَابَتِ الشَّمْسِ كَاسِفَةً. And so if the sun sets during a solar eclipse, okay, then one doesn't pray because its sultan has gone. Yani the magnificence or the awe of the moment is gone. Okay? وَكَوْنَهَا كَاسِفَةً أَغَارَ كَاسِفَةً بِالنِّسْبَ لَنَا حِينَ غَابَتْ لَا يُؤَثِّرْ شَيْئًا فَلَمَّا زَالَ سُلْطَانُهَا سَقَطَتِ الْمُطَالِبِ بِالسَّلَامِ. It's also good. It's also interesting. He says, the fact that the sun, whether it's actually being eclipsed somewhere else or not, or we can see it or not, or whatever, whatnot, is actually irrelevant. The point is that for us, it's, yeah, any, so you got an eclipse, yeah, of the sun. You want to imagine that there's a sun, and we're just before Maghrib, and it's eclipse, and it's like, it's a madness, right? And then it sets. When the sun is gone, it actually hasn't gone anywhere. That's what Sheikh Uthaymeen is saying. So we know that the sun is very much there if you just go to a different place. But for us, the prayer was predicated on its impact upon us of it being there. When it goes, that's what the ruling is based upon. So the prayer then also is not offered, or it is stopped and it is brought to an end. Okay, what are the issues in this particular chapter? The first one, if the the Hanbalis say that If there's a solar eclipse at the end of the day, so again, let's just say just before Maghrib, right? End of the day, meaning before the Maghrib time. You do not pray the eclipse prayer because A, it's a sunnah prayer, according to the Hanbali madhab, and B, it's a prayer which has a reason or a cause, and prayers that have a cause are not offered in prohibited times for prayer. That's the position of the Hanbali school. We all know across the board that the after Salatul Asr until Maghrib and after Salatul Fajr until sunrise, these are prohibited times. And when we study the Fiqh Salah, we kind of like, you know, formulate it as light and heavy. So the after Asr, you've prayed Asr until Maghrib, this is a light prohibited time. And then the actual setting of the sun when it's actually going down below the horizon, that's heavy prohibited time, like full haram time. Even though the other one is also haram, quote unquote. And then likewise, after Fajr. After Fajr, this is a light haram time. And then when it's actually, then the sun appears on the game and then 10, 15 minutes of rising, heavy haram time. And we treat both of these time slots differently. And the scholars had massive difference in terms of their positions on it. And we covered all of that a good couple of years ago in a lot of detail. What's the point now? The Hanbalis are saying, right, well, now what if there's an eclipse at this time? We don't pray. It's sunnah, first of all, it's not obligatory. And it's a prayer that's brought up for a reason. But anyone with a reason, it gets overcome by the generality of the prohibition of the time that is being offered in. So now a discussion is going to proceed, Sheikh says. But actually the correct position in this matter is that you do pray the eclipse prayer after the Asr prayer, like we did in the PG retreat. Like it's okay to offer the prayer at this time. Okay? Or, yeah, we pray it. And the reason for that is because the Prophet ﷺ said that when you see it, meaning the eclipse, then pray. A definitive, clear command. And Sheikh Uthaymeen says this prayer, this command, it includes every time, whatever the time is. The Prophet ﷺ did not say except if it's sunrise, except if it's sunset, except if it's this, except if that. He said you pray it and that's it. Okay? Now, of course, let's not bring science into it yet. But the fact that we know that a lot of this will happen in the Asr time, generally, would be an indication. But it's like that's like a cheat, right? Let's just try to deal with this from an Islamic point of view because it's a big discussion that's going to go. So he goes, all right. So if we say that, someone's going to say, hold on. The Prophet ﷺ said, La salata ba'd al-asr. The Prophet ﷺ said in Hadith Bukhari, Hadith number 1864, that there is no prayer to be offered after the Asr prayer. That is the Hadith which makes it prohibited to pray. And this hadith means that every prayer is included in that. And when you have two rulings side by side, the way that we deal with them, this is the argument continued, okay? Well, one argument is saying that you are not allowed to pray during this time. And the other argument is, so one is prohibiting. And the other argument is saying to pray this prayer in the form of a command. So the other thing is commanding. But both are general, right? They're speaking in general terms. No prayer, not a specific statement. No prayer to be offered. Pray it whenever, okay? So what we have here is to try to identify which one is general, which one is specific. Are they equal in their generality? If they are equal in the generality, can we then use another kind of principle to differentiate between them? Because if there's one general and one which is specific, and we say that one is specifying the other, that makes it a bit easier. But when they're two general commands, then it becomes a bit more difficult. Scholars are then going to start to have theories. So, for example, they will say, well, in this kind of situation, when we have like, you know, two generals and one's got to take over the other, how can we do that with a command and a prohibition? So some of the scholars said that we will put the obligation forward because the command is more powerful. You know, if I command you to do something, you feel like, okay, that should be given precedence. So out of the two, I'm going to do that. The response comes back straight away And they said, بَلْ عُمُومُ النَّهِي. No, rather the generality of prohibition. لِأَنَّهُ أَحْوَطْ لِأَنَّكَ تَقَعُ فِي مَعْصِيَةٍ. يعني, they said, no, actually the opposite. You should put the prohibition forward because that's safer. Right? Because not being able to achieve يعني, something higher and better is one thing, but falling into haram from a default position is something more serious. You get the point? You get the logic, yeah? So you should save yourself from the risk of falling into haram and therefore give that precedence. So that was their argument. Not yani make yourself the other way round. Sheikh Uthaymeen then mentioned something about Ibn Taymiyyah. He said that when Ibn Taymiyyah discussed this, he said that there is a maxim out there that when you have two umumain, two generalities, two general principles, and one it becomes specified, then its strength to be an absolute rule, I say general, but the point of what I'm actually mean, I mean absolute, yeah? That when it has like kind of some specific sense to it, like pray when this happens, then it doesn't become so strong as a general or an absolute rule. It feels very specific, right? It feels very specific. So meaning that if something can become specified, if something can be given characteristics and details, then it's not very absolute. It's not very wide-reaching. It's not very, very dominant. And therefore, we will prefer the one which cannot be specified because it is more stable, because it is the one which is not affected by different realities. That's what Ibn Taymiyyah said. And Sheikh Uthaymeen says, he's got a point, that's true, that the general kind of absolute point, I know this is kind of complicated, might be going over people's heads, but the point is that when you've got two absolute statements and one of them can be specified, then the one that can't be specified should be given dominance. And Sheikh Uthaymeen agrees with that. He goes, I get this point, and that's okay. He goes, but the correct position on this, لكن الراجح أن العام إذا خصص يبقى عاما إلا في مسألة التي خصص فيها فقط. And I have to say that this is the most obvious يعني to me. This is our taught position since years. This is the class position as well. And that is that if there is a general principle that has a specific situation that acts as an exception, then it can be a specific exception in that matter only, and it still remains its generality in its generality. I.e., if the Prophet ﷺ said there's no prayer to be offered in this time, then there's no prayer to be offered in this time except for this, because A, Y, A, B, C. All right? This is the explanation. فالحديث الأمر بالصلاة عند رؤية الكسوف لم يخصص وحديث الصلاة بعد العصر مخصص بقول النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم. So, for example, the hadith of telling a person to pray when they see the eclipse is an absolute statement. There is no yani space for exceptions. There's no indication of any exceptions and the like. Okay? There's no way to specify this. There's no way to create an exception to this. Whereas the hadith which says, do not pray after Asr, there have been exemptions. We do have evidences of specific things that have override its general prohibition. For example, this hadith, the Prophet ﷺ said to the two guys, إِذَا صَلَّيْتُمَا فِي رِحَالِكُمَا ثُمَّ أَتَيْتُمَا مَسْجِدِ جَمَاعَ فَصَلِّيَّا مَعَهُمْ فَإِنَّهَا لَكُمَا نَافِلَةً. When, if you two do that again, pray at home. This is the story of the two guys who came into the masjid, right? And after Salatul Fajr, right? Or at Salatul Fajr, sorry. And they basically didn't join. And they sat down. And the Prophet ﷺ came to them afterwards and said to them, you know, what's going on? And they said, we prayed our Fajr at home. Then we came to the masjid. So we didn't think that you got to pray again. So he said to them, if you do used to pray again at home, again, and then you decide to, you don't have to, but if you decide to come to the masjid, then you pray again with those guys and it will be a nafil for you. Now, the hadith says there's no second prayer, there's no additional prayer after you pray Fajr. And yet the Prophet ﷺ is telling him, pray Fajr again, nafil prayer. So the aam prohibition, the general prohibition of not praying after Fajr, has been specified. Is the word specified the right? I think I'm using the wrong word. Restricted? Has been exempted by specific yani exemptions or whatever. I don't know how to explain it, but I think you get the point. So there are specific exceptions possible, right? So Sheikh Uthaymeen says, so the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam mentioned to these two guys who didn't come for Salatul Fajr, and you know, to do that, and even though there's no prayer to be offered after Salatul Fajr. Likewise, this time, whether it's after Fajr or after Asr, as we, whenever we're in the Umrah programs, this is one of the most common questions that get asked, because the time to do Umrah, the time to do extra tawaf, there's some strategy behind it. Yeah? Because, especially in the Haram, Makkah, it's difficult because person doesn't get to go, you know, very often. And when they do go there, they're all about going to take advantage. And as human beings, we're all about, you know, easy wins. We're actually, you know, genetically pre-programmed to find easy wins. It's not just packs like a good deal. Everybody loves a good deal. It's like in us. And that's why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives deals. If you think about it. Sales and offers is the sunnah, by the way. I'm telling you 100%. Every Friday we get yani bonus. Every night we get a bonus. Yani every Eid, every Arafah. If you think about it, right? It's the psyche of human beings. We love that. Laylatul Qadr, yeah, we'll have some of that, bro. Yeah? Love that, right? You get 1,000 times more, 100,000 times more. One act is 10, then 10 by 700 more. We love that behavior. I mean, if we didn't have that in us, we'd just be accepting every good is good and one for one and that's it. No, we want more, isn't it? We love an idea. But it doesn't mean that we don't carry on the rest of the time. But when we hear that, oh, you know what? What they're called? This is Sha'aban's coming. No, the one they just had a couple of days ago. Shabi Barat? No. Shabi what? Shabi Miraj. Shabi Miraj. No, Shabi Barat is the one that's coming up, isn't it? Yeah, Shabi Miraj. What's that? What's the bonus on offer? We're fasting today, we're fasting tomorrow. All the aunties, yani came out, sending WhatsApp messages. My mom sent me like 15 messages. I said, bro, you can send me 500 messages. I'm not doing nothing. All right? Just leave me alone. And knock yourself out. You want to fast, you want to eat, you want to go and give sadaqah, you want to give halwa to everybody, do it, bro. Right? Everyone loves a deal. So the big question is, obviously, when I go to the haram, what can I do? It's difficult when you have a person that can get 100,000 of his prayers that he's never going to do in 100 years at home for one prayer and just not think that that's what I should be knocking out all the time. Right? And culturally, that's what you think. Islamically, we tell this guy, actually, forget 100,000. There's something far more rewarded and better here than that. It's called tawaf. They're like, what? Like the heart doesn't gravitate towards that. You don't feel it. Where's the numbers? Say like, you know, say like this tawaf is worth like 100,000. Like, show me the deal. Do you know what I mean? Make it more. But that is the absolute prime act of worship to do in the haram. Now, if you know anything, you have strategy. So you know, it's neither this or that. It's a combination approach. So I should approach Mecca, the haram, with pray when I can. There are obvious times I can't pray. So then I'll do tawaf during those times. Now, that would be the planning of a guy who's never been to the haram. Then when you come to the haram, and then your theory goes to pot. Because the world and his yani whatever, and his mum yani are doing tawaf after Fajr. No space, horrible. And after Asr, the same. Especially if you're on the mataf, right? If you go upstairs, then, you know, they've just opened up the roof quite a bit now in the busy periods. But they still close it quite a lot as well. But yeah, in December we were there, it was really busy and they opened it up. Oh, it's fantastic. So that's great after Asr. But, you know, Fajr, even Fajr on the roof is busy. Even on the roof, it gets busy because a lot of people do it. But anyway, the point is, you can't pray during that time, so you might as well make tawaf. Here's the thing. People are used to doing tawaf on the ground floor after Fajr, where it's extremely busy. There's not a chance that you're finishing before sunrise. So the issue never arises. Yeah? But if you're doing it on the roof, you're going to finish in half an hour. Easy. So you finished and there's like half an hour left for sunrise. You've got to make a decision now. Looking at your watch, breakfast time at the Hyatt Regency, and it's 6:30, ice cream being offered yani for breakfast. Bro, which hotel offers ice cream? Let me tell you, Hyatt Regency, bro. Oh, what if I tell you 27 or 26 minutes? Bro, it's empty. Bro, I'm telling you now, you will not believe it. By the way, with a wheelchair, 26 minutes. The best thing to do is to offer the wheelchair. You're basically running around. It's great. Anyway. The point is that you finish early. And people ask the question, can I pray my 2 rak'ah of tawaf so I can get off? Or do I have to wait? It's not waiting until sunrise, is it? You're waiting another half hour as well. You're waiting another 20 minutes for it to happen. Then you're praying. You know what I mean? It's a long time. And the answer is that it's allowed. It's allowed to offer the tawaf prayer, 2 rak'ah, even though it's a sunnah. But it's a prayer with a reason that's restricted by time and event. And anything that has a reason that's restricted by time and event and it comes into a prohibited time is given precedence. It is the exception. Yeah? So, Sheikh says that even if a person did it after Asr, he would pray 2 rak'ah, no problem. And it also, this prohibited time is specified or is exempted by makeup prayers, by qada. So if you, for whatever reason, you forgot about dhuhr, and then you prayed Asr, then you remembered, you thought, oh my God, I prayed Asr, I forgot dhuhr, right? Then you pray it, because it has a reason to be offered. And so therefore, what we find is for umum an-nahi idha mukhassas bi'iddat mukhassasat, فَيَكُونُ عُمُمُهُ ضَعِفًا. So he said that the absolute rule of it being prohibited to pray after Asr, if there's any kind of absolute rule like that, that can be exempted? There's better English here, guys. Are you all looking at me like a bunch of kebabs? Huh? Can be what? No, not restricted. Can be overridden by specific exemptions. That's what I'm trying to say, yeah? So the general prohibition, the absolute prohibition, you find out wasn't actually so absolutely prohibited. You know when you say, that's absolutely haram. You know, if I say, absolutely haram, then you think, bloody hell, that's absolutely haram. Except actually for you, then you're thinking, what the hell kind of absolute haram is that? Yep? And that's actually the point he wants to make. He goes that if there are too many of, you guys are okay. If you have iddat mukhassasat, if you have multiple exemptions, then the absolute prohibition in the first place was weak in the first place. It wasn't very absolute. Listen to the Arabic again. فَعُمُومَ النَّهِي إِذَا مُخَصَّصَ بِعِدَّةِ مُخَصَّصَاتِ فَيَكُونُ عُمُومُهُ ضَعِيفًا وَيُقَدَّمْ حَدِيثُ الْأَمْرِ. يعني, again, if you have a general, if you have an absolute prohibition that you're making loads of exemptions for whatever reason, then it wasn't a very absolute prohibition in the first place. Okay? I hope someone can put that into nice English for us. And so he goes, in this case, that is the case with the prohibition of prayer, and therefore the order to pray eclipse prayer is stronger, it should be given precedence, and therefore a person should pray it in this time. And he goes, by the way, adds a little gem, this was a second opinion narrated from Imam Ahmed. Because the reason we had this whole discussion is because the Hanbalis, following Imam Ahmed's position and teaching, is that you are not allowed to offer the eclipse prayer for the reasons offered. Yeah? Whereas we're saying, no, that's not right. You can offer it. And Sheikh Uthaymeen says, by the way, that is actually a narration from Imam Ahmed too. So it's not exactly like crazy controversial to the Hanbali school. Another one. If you start the eclipse prayer after Asr, and then sun sets, okay, then you also complete the prayer very, very quickly. Okay? You complete the prayer very, very quickly. If the eclipse finishes before the sun sets, you finish the prayer very, very quickly. Everything that ends that's connected to the eclipse being the eclipse, the prayer ends. Finish off the prayer very, very quickly. Another example. إذا طلعت الشمس كاسفة فعلى المذهب لا يصلى إلا إذا ارتفعت قيد رمح، فإن تجلى قبل أن ترتفع قيد رمح سقطت. وعلى القول الصحيح تصلى مباشرة، فإن تجلى قبل الزوال وقت النهي أتمها خفيفة. يعني if the sun rises okay during the actual eclipse then the prayer is not offered because the game's over, right? The game's over. Except, and they said that it's not offered, by the way. They said that the prayer to be offered during sunrise is a prohibited time. But for us, we're saying that as long as the eclipse power is there and the feeling is there, whatever the reality of the sun, rising, not rising, its prohibition is being exempted or specified by the command to pray the actual prayer. And if it does finish, okay, then we, meaning the event, then we finish the prayer really, really quickly. All right. لو another final example. لو لم نعلم بكسوفها إلا حين غروبها فلا نصلي ونعلل بأن سلطانها قد ذهب فنحن الآن في الليل لا في النهار وهي آية النهار. That if we did not know that the sun was being eclipsed except when it was setting. So I don't know how that works, by the way, but I'm guessing it must be able to, right? So the sun, so we didn't know. And suddenly we realize there's a bit of a darkness, which is different to the normal darkness of the sun setting. And we look up and we see that the eclipse is actually happening as the sun is setting. What do you do? Sheikh Uthaymeen says, we do not pray. Okay? And the reason we don't pray is because the actual Sultan, the status and the magnificence of the sun that is being so humbled by an eclipse that's making us humbled, is on his way out anyway. And in fact, 2 minutes later is gone. So what are we, what's the reasoning for our prayer in the first place? Right?
What if it's the sun was, and it's the sun that's being eclipsed, and that's going to stay?
What if the sun rises and then it eclipses? Then, oh yeah, that's hardcore. That's like the craziest of eclipse prayers. That'd be crazy, right? Sun comes onto the scene, immediately eclipsed. I don't even know if that's possible. But if that happened, yeah, it's a mad one, right? Yeah, definitely. And then to finish off, أو طلعت والقمر خاسف. So if the sun rises and the moon is eclipsed, Sheikh asks a question, هل يمكن أن تطلع والقمر خاسف? Is that possible, he goes? By the way, I have no idea. He's saying that if the lunar eclipse, so the lunar eclipse is what? The moon has to be in between the earth and the sun, the moon.
Where the point of where the darkness and the light meets,
where it's going to be exactly at that same moment. And then the sun's rising. So is the moon moving as well or something? So he asks, is it possible that show a lunar eclipse during a sunrise? Yeah? No, bro. Or the sun rises during a lunar eclipse. Sheikh says, is it possible? He goes, let me translate literally. He goes, yes, it is possible. Al-jawab yunkin. Fafi nisf al-shahr. It's only going to happen in the 14th and 15th of the lunar month. Okay? Yakun al-qamar fil gharb. That the moon is towards the western side. Okay? Western side of the world, I mean. Yeah? Earth. Wa shamsu fil sharq. And the sun is in the eastern, what? Eastern side, horizon, hemisphere, what? East, yeah? فَرُبَّمَا يَكْسِفَ بَعْدَمَا تَطْلَعُ الشَّمْسِ وَهَذَا شَيْءٌ قَدْ وَقَعَ. He goes, after the sun has risen, it can. So, okay, so it's not happening during, it's happening a bit, I think, after.
Like it happened and then the sun right within the
The way he said, فَرُبُمَا يَكْسِفَ بَعْدَ مَا تَطْلُعُ الشَّمْسِ. Like translating what he said, he goes, it's possible that when the moon is in the east, the moon is in the west and the sun is in the east, that when the sun rises, it then eclipses the moon. West. That's the west, that's the moon, that's the sun. It rises and eclipses the moon somehow. He goes, it's happened anyway. فَإِذَا طَلَعَتْ
Moon's on this side, so you're literally blocking the moon. What is amazing, there were opposite sides of the horizon.
Yeah, that's right. Correct. They're opposite sides of the horizon. Hemisphere, horizon, or whatever. So you've got this happening. You've got a situation, actually, for that temporary moment of the rising that you've got in the way. You, meaning Earth. You, Earthlings. Yeah? So, فَإِذَا طَلَعَتْ وَالْقَمْرُ خَاسِفْ فَإِنَّهَا لَا يُصَلَّى. But when that happens, you don't pray. He said, لِأَنَّهُ ذَهَبَ سُلْطَانَهُ وَإِنَّ سُلْطَانَ الْقَمَرِ اللَّيْلِ كَمَا لَوْ غَابَتِ الشَّمْسُ وَهِيَ كَاسِفَةٌ. يعني, I wonder if I've been using the word sultan here wrong. Because here he says, the sultan of the moon is the night. So maybe I didn't explain it nicely. I mean, it was obvious what I was trying to say, that the sun, it's... A selenilayan occurs when the sun and moon are observed above the horizon during a lunar eclipse.
Because you're not actually seeing...
You're not actually seeing...
No, you're seeing a like a reflection in the upper.
Oh, right. So to read it out, it says that a selenilayan occurs when the sun and moon are observed above the horizon during a lunar eclipse. Atmospheric refraction bends the light rays and lifts the image of the sun and moon, typically minus 0.6 degrees. So both appear above the horizon. So they're not actually above the horizon. So if you look at the actual positions, they are actually not visible. But the light, whatever, flat earthers, oh, hello. Flat earthers assert a selenilayan should not be possible if Earth is a sphere due to the fact that the sun and moon are 180 degrees apart during a lunar eclipse. In reality, a selenilayan is possible because Earth's atmosphere refracts light. So the fact that that happens is a proof that there's no flat earth. I wonder, you know why I find that interesting? I find that interesting because Sheikh Uthaymeen and Sheikh Ibn Baz were obviously contemporaries. They're the two biggest scholars that this ummah has seen in the last 100 years, in generality. Or, that's a bit of a big statement. Yeah, they're the two big scholars, right? In Saudi Arabia. And of course, Ibn Baz has this massive thing over his head, being the great scholar and mufti that he was. There's a lot of claims that he insisted that the earth is flat. It was one of his positions, right? And to be honest, I never took any interest in it, whatever, neither from a scientific point of view or neither from what him. But it's just like famously said, I don't even know whether it's true or not, in fact, the claim. And I don't even know whether he had it and recanted or whether he believed it and he died upon it. I don't know. But I do find it interesting that the very first thing that Sheikh Uthaymeen says is that, is this even possible? And I wonder whether he's asking that question as a little, you know what I mean? A little dig to the big man himself. Because obviously that was his senior. Ibn Baz was the senior, right? Yeah, alayhi rahmatullah. Nice. So anyway, the point is that the whole point of the eclipse is the nighttime. If there's no night, then what do we care about what happens to the moon? it being covered, not covered, it has no impact upon the actual planet because the sun is bathing the whole world in light. That's why we don't pray, because there's no value, there's no reaction, there's no emotion, there's no nothing. Mas'ala, Sheikh says, لو طلع الفجر وخسف القمر قبل طلوع الشمس هل يصلى؟ لو طلع الفجر, if Fajr starts, Fajr, not the sun, sorry. So Fajr starts, the moon becomes eclipsed before sunrise has even started, do we pray? Sheikh Uthaymeen says, قد نقول إن مفهوم قوله أو طلعت والقمر خاسف أنها تصلى ولكن المشهور من المذهب أنها لا تصلى بعد طلوع الفجر إذا خسف القمر لأنه وقت النهي. He goes, well, into the response to this question, according to the Hanbalis, is that you wouldn't pray because the sun is about to rise, and if the sun is about to rise, then the whole point is gone, according to the literal like understanding. So even though this is happening before the sun is rising, so we're sitting at the night, we're seeing the impact, you know, all the rest of it. Sheikh says, but the correct position, and we end on this, أنها تصلى, it is prayed. We do offer it in prayer. إن كان القمر لو إن كان القمر لولا الكسوف لأضاء أما إذا كان النهار قد انتشر ولم يبقى إلا القليل على طلوع الشمس فهنا قد ذهب سلطانه والناس لا ينتفعون به سواء كان كاسفا أو مبدرا. He goes that it is prayed, but as long as we are seeing an impact on the actual light being yani taken out. But if there's so much light and you can't even tell and you can't even feel it and the night is going and its authority is gone and its place is gone and it's being eclipsed, we can't even tell, you know, nobody even can see or feel or whatever, whatnot, then it's something else. He goes, then it's not often. But if it's happening early enough and you feel the darkness enough being, you know, impacted in a way that you feel something, then it should be offered regardless. And Allah knows best. And Allah knows best. All right, we'll take some questions now, folks. So we'll take some questions here and then we'll do the thingy. It'd be good if someone does... someone looks actually on Aways or someone to see what Sheikh bin Baz's position was. Like maybe on an Islam QA or website or something. Was there not a pen here? Yeah, go on. Sorry, yeah.
So whether the moon, or whether it's daytime or nighttime, when it comes to lunar eclipses, like if you've seen a lunar eclipse, you can't really tell.
If you see a lunar eclipse, you can't tell during the nighttime.
If you're walking down the road and looking at the pattern, you really can't tell unless you look.
If it was a full one, you'd tell. I mean, obviously, in England, where there's so much pollution, light pollution, maybe not. But I have a southern-facing garden, and I follow the month by the moon. I have no idea what's going on. It's very bright.
But if you don't see it live eclipsing, then you might think, oh, there's a bunch of clouds. So what I'm trying to say is, if it happens during the day when it's, you know, very bright, got 6 degrees, and post by the other, we see, and somebody notices that the moon is glittering. It's kind of the same as you noticing that when you go overnight. You might think, oh, it's just a cloud.
I am. I do get what you're saying, and I think that's valid. I'm saying that when, and again, this would go back to how people are understanding it, not you. And so if the general people like missed it because it didn't feel like one, then it's not offered. The whole point of the eclipse is there's got to be an eclipse. And this eclipse is not linked to how much light is actually taken, but it's got to be an eclipse. It's not going to be like a, you know, a second thought mistake or something. Yeah.
So, in the class, you say the two key factors are the ought and the effect.
Yeah.
Like where you said at the end, you're doing the shit at the end, and also they say the Bikwaduna kicks happens during the day. It doesn't matter. It's not affected. We are only looking at the one key cut, not the earth. The call that happy, that. Miraculously speak or whatever was supposed that bit thing to happen. The time should matter. Yes, like you said
himself, so yeah, that would be an opinion, but it's not held by the majority of scholars. What basically is being said is that why should we care whether the eclipse is happening in a day or not? we should pray when it happens, because it's about it happening as opposed to us seeing it or feeling it or not. And what we've established in our classes in these last few months, in these last few weeks, is that no, actually, the reason behind it is seeing it. And seeing it, the ru'ya, is seeing something that has an impact, right? Seeing it, that it means something. Seeing something and it meaning nothing is not the same as seeing something and thinking, oh, this is something else. And so, yeah, the position of majority of scholars, and certainly our class position there, is linked to being seen, being of value, quote unquote. Those online, if you've got questions, you need to ask the question again, please. Yeah? Yeah.
So you mentioned that if it's attended and you ended prayer, my understanding, in this we practice, honey, when the Prophet saw the eclipse, he must have experienced a full total
shura, right? Though that full thing only lasts a
few minutes.
Yep. In that time, you know, he's getting to the West Gate.
Yep.
The totality of the eclipse probably finished. And so now it's just that business.
And which is why we said, right, that it's not linked to the totality. And totality is that perfect sphere on sphere. But the illah is not sphere on sphere. That's for us the romantic perfect eclipse. There's no romanticism in this. As soon as you see a bite taken out of the sun, that's game over. To the believer, like, what the hell? Then it's spreading. And then, so that's what we said. We said that's like 2 hours or something last week. Yeah, but one hour. Why not?
I mean, you go see a solar eclipse, you can't tell. You see the full sun until the very last second when you see the total eclipse. And the more the moon moves a minute later, it's... You see the full sun again, because it's so powerful that you can't see it that way.
Is that true?
I think totally.
You're saying, what you're trying to say, I can't remember the two words for it, bloody blah, bloody blah, yeah? You're saying that the partial thing is not a progressive covering of the sun, it's partial and then it goes back to normal.
First,
yeah,
but you can't tell. If you look at it without the special glasses,
yeah,
you can tell that's happening. Unless you notice, oh, it's getting a bit thin around.
Yep.
That could be you thinking
about. Sure, but if you thought that, and that's the natural point, that you'd look and you see the dark, kind of like what's happening, and then you look up, and then you realize what's going on. That's the point here.
But even then, you wouldn't be, like, if you look up, you can't have a major problem. You see the
full
diff.
Bro, I'm pretty sure I've seen an eclipse and I've known what's going on.
No, you know how you see it. Unless you wear the glasses, you cannot see the
world. Oh, okay. So you're trying to say that sometimes the sun is so bright that you don't have the ability without, whatever. But by the way, that's not true. If it's late in the afternoon, that's only the case if it's in the daytime, early afternoon. The whole reason that the sun's color that we observe is purely an expression of refraction of light. And refraction of light is angle dependent. And if the angle is reduced because it's further in the day and it's on its way down in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you can look straight at the sun and see its edges perfectly. Perfectly. And so, yeah. And so then you absolutely see the moon, the journey of the moon, the X, the Y.
That will happen. The two eclipses I seen, I was like, where's the moon? Where's the moon? Where's the moon? I put finger on and the moon is literally, it's covered 90% of the
sun. Huh.
But if you take the glasses off, you
can't tell. No, I agree with that. But that makes sense to me when it's like 11 o'clock, Dhuhr, whatever. Awais says that what you found on Google is that Ibn Baz alayhi rahmatullah didn't say that the earth was flat. But rather the confusion arises from his defense of the earth being stationary, which he distinguished from its shape. He maintained that the earth is spherical, but believed it does not move. He believed that it doesn't move. He also clarified that while he considered those who claim the sun is stationary, not orbiting, to be in major error, due to their contradiction of specific Quranic verses, he did not apply that same judgment to those who believe the earth moves. So, yeah, okay. Anyway, he had some issues with the orbit and the planets and whatever, whatnot. Yeah. What is the class position on raising your finger during tashahhud? Should it be done for the whole sitting? Yes. From beginning to the very, very end. Lifted up, not moving, looking at the finger, and from beginning right to the end. If you do wudu and wear your socks, but then change them immediately or moments after, does it invalidate the act of doing masa on the socks later? Answer is yes. The answer is yes. How's the breakfast at Anjab? Yeah, it's all right. The problem is that, yeah, when you ask that question, if you're talking about compared to breakfast, 1 second, we're speaking about an important subject here, bro. If you're talking about compared to normal breakfast, then it's great. It's great. I mean, bro, when you're having any juice and kebabs and flipping, yeah, any dal soup and kimchi and God knows what, yeah, for breakfast, it's all going to be great. But when you're comparing it to the higher Regency, bro, where you got chocolate fountain, you got flipping, yeah, any, you got date shake, you've got 5 types of tea, you got a guy who's got a whole ice cream gelato counter, right? You have waiters who recognize me, by the way, because they keep thinking that I brought Moeen Ali again, right? They're cricket fans, and every time they see me, they say, "How's brother Moeen? How's brother Moeen?" I say, he's great. Bring the ice cream, bro. It's great. They keep thinking I'm going to bring Moeen Ali out. I just want your ice cream, bro. Just send me some couple of... It's great. So nothing compares to the higher Regency, bro. Anjum is all right. Right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Where were we? Yeah. Yeah, socks. Yes. They've said they've taken the socks off. A new one on. Yeah, yeah. So the foot has been now made bare, and now they put new ones on. Don't you dare try to blag that one.
You make wudu.
Yes.
You're in wudu.
Yeah. I didn't say break wudu.
Okay, so you put a sock on.
Yeah. And?
Whatever you think, you'll be putting another sock on.
Not interested. Broken. 100%. Don't tell me I've said different in my class position. Don't say that I've done that. Have I said that the time difference is too small, irrelevant, blah, blah? Because that is the argument, by the way. That's the... That's the.
You can't put the same sock back on. That's what I remember.
What's it got to do with the same or different? The concept is that you have taken off the sock. So you've now exposed the foot to the covering. Huh? No. So let me give you an example. Let's say you put on your sock. And then you put on your shoe. Above the ankle, like a boot.
Yeah.
Can you wipe over the boot?
Yeah.
Why?
You take the boot off and it's invalid.
What's invalid?
You can't do mass on the boot.
Because you've taken it off.
If you put a different
one. What the heck? Oh, that's true. Correct. Because the sock is still covering the foot. Yeah, because the sock is still covering the foot. Because the sock is still covering the boot. Once you now take that sock off, you have invalidated the right to make masah on your foot, regardless of what you do. We're not talking about wudu. We're talking about the ability to now wipe on another sock.
What you're saying is you're only more...
Yeah.
You say the model.
Yeah.
You say it's...
Yep.
No, but...
Yep. Disaster decision. That's why I always say, take your socks out from the night before. I always say it. Or you just have black socks.
Okay, and then you put the other sock on.
Yeah.
You're still in wool, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you put your sock on.
Yeah.
New fresh
sock. Because you have taken off the one thing that was allowing you to make masah, which is that sock. I never say he broke wudu either. Let's think of an example. First of all, what's important Thank you, Maiza. Maiza, can someone, Bilal, can we find our class position on this? Okay. Bro, even at the time, I would have argued that the fact that it's been, I remember a time where pre this ruling, I used to be like, you know, like, you love this example. You ever seen Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom? No, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark. I used to do that with my socks, bro. I used to have the next one ready. Didn't even see it happen, bro. You didn't even see it happen. Have you destroyed the bot? By the way, did the public know about the bot? Okay, bro, we got a sick bot coming out. LP bot. You ask it a question and it gives the answer and the evidence and everything, whatever. But it's got some bugs in it though. See, you couldn't find it. Right? Shahan says, and by the way, Shahan's got proper skin in his game because he's going over it right now and he comes up with some wicked lines. Yep. It's not about purity, it's about the rules of the concession. Exactly. This is not about the logic here. It's about what is the concession based upon. That's a beautiful Allah. He's absolutely spot on. You must have heard me say that. If you think about it, why? No, seriously. Why are you being allowed to wipe over the sock? No. Why? Think about it. Why? No, because it's a mission to take them off. The whole point is, because it's a concession, like it's a jihad type concession. The last thing that you got to be thinking about when you're in jihad, yani, is I've got to take off my shoes, got to take off my socks, got to. It's a mission, just vroom, right? So if you're this lying luxury guy with, you know, Shahzad Salim with his yani silk socks, whatever, who takes them off like this and then puts another pair on, yani, you know, five times a day because his little tootsies, yani, get a bit sway, yeah, bro, those concessions not for that, bro. Because he's abusing the concession. Rah! I go, yeah, I just take him off and do what I want. On, off, whatever. Okay. Now Abbas is going for it now, right now. And Shahan, 100%. Right. So Maiza said that snow got in your boot. The socks got wet. Now, if you take them off, you cannot continue wiping over them. You need to do wudu, then wear new socks, then continue with the concession if you want the concession. Agreed. Sick line. But we still need to find our statements. All right, guys. Barakallahu feek. Subhanakallahumma bihamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Astaghfiruka Allahumma wa atubu ilayk. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, folks.